Hello, everybody. Welcome to Teal's Roadhouse. Glad to have you here with us back in the man cave. John Chris in the house.
Oh, yeah. Man, this ain't a cave. This is not a cave. This is false advertisement. This is palatial.
This is bigger than my first 12 apartments.
I thought cave would have to be down. Doesn't it have to be down in the basement?
I don't know.
This is a whole separate house.
It steps down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How that counts. Yeah.
Well, it was a man cave. I did have control of it at one point, and then my wife took it over.
This is, your wife took it over.
The pool table used to be down here.
Oh, yeah.
And she rearranged everything. And she's decided that she wants to knock out the wall of the house and connect the house to the pool house.
Obviously.
It's the kids are gone. I don't know why we need to add more to the house.
They got
to
have something. They're always tinkering with stuff.
She would move the furniture every freaking day if she could. And I like shit to stay exactly where it's at.
Move it around.
Yeah. Don't change the plates. Just leave stuff alone. I like normalcy.
But she ever go, not to give away all the secrets, but there's a stack of Amazon boxes on this man's front porch that are probably 12 high.
Already?
I'm guessing those are not for you.
Well, some of them might be. I'm ordering podcast stuff all the time, upgrading.
Podcast.
And we just got e-bikes, so I've got bike racks that we put in the trailer and all the stuff. I mean, I love Amazon.
Oh, it's nice, especially out here.
It is. Well, the Amazon distribution plant's like 2 miles from the back door as the crow flies. It's just right there. So we could get stuff here in like 45 minutes.
And they come all the way in here. They come all the way to the door.
I think they should just give me my own truck and they can have a code to the gate and they can just come in and do stuff.
You're good.
Yeah.
Come in the house and set it up.
Just come on in the house.
It's growing around here then, right?
Oh, Mount Juliet's growing a lot. This place is booming out here. When I first moved out here in the early 90s, everything around here was just 2-lane roads. It was still a gravel road down my road. And
you were the first one on this road?
No, but I had another house up there, but I bought all the land at the end of the road.
This is a country song. This land is a country song. Yeah.
This used to be called the Bass Plantation. This was a tobacco farm.
Really?
And they said that this was the wagon road to Smyrna, which came right through here.
Oh,
and the ferry would come across from Hendersonville.
That sounds like your next album.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Wagon Road to Smyrna.
The Wagon Trail to Smyrna.
Well, do you ever, like when you're on stage or something like that, I feel this a lot when you're in meetings about payroll and agents and stuff. Sometimes I look out and I would see a guy like cutting the grass and I go, I wish I was him. Just for a second.
No, I did
a lot of I was like, who cuts the grass? Can you let me come out here and just run it?
My wife cuts the grass.
Really?
She loves to cut the grass. I bought her one of those zero-turn lawnmowers.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I do the bush hogging. I keep the perimeters clean. But she even does the weed eating. I'm telling you. I'm not kidding. She loves to do it. She mowed just before she left. She had to go to Houston yesterday.
I feel like we need like a glossary for this podcast. I don't know. The bush what?
the brush. The perimeters. The bush hog.
Is that a
brush
machine?
Hog? Bush hog.
Is that a
you attach
machine,
it to the back of the tractor.
Oh, okay.
It's not a manscaping.
Oh, yeah. I did the bush hogging. Yeah.
I keep her all trimmed up.
Hey, you guys going out later? Well, my wife got bush hogged up.
It's
like some of those. We did on our podcast. We had one of our comic buddies in the podcast. He doesn't know anything about country. And we played one of those new Hardy songs. And he was like, all these terms that hip hop is the same.
Yeah.
They have all these like terms about like the.
And it's cultural things.
Honey holes and like the weight. You catch a bass on the weight. Like if something about like if the jug goes catching skeeters on a jug or something. I go, what does that mean? He goes, dude, I have no idea. I have no idea what that means. That's all the terms of country music that.
Yeah, and dirt road anthem and all those things. But I grew up in a town of 1,000, 1,100 people where all we had to do was ride around on gravel roads and drink beer. We had like three spots. We had a couple of gravel pits. We had Rice Hill. We had a couple of cemeteries we partied at. So we were the Foreman Gators. That was our mascot. So we had the Gator Inn that was this little shitty restaurant. So that's where everybody would meet up on the weekend. So everybody drives around, you meet up, and then you determine which party place you're going to go to because you go hide from the cops and you build a bonfire. That's what we did.
So if you wrote a song about this, everyone who knew that would be like, I can't believe you just referenced Gator Inn or whatever.
The Gator
like,
Inn.
Or whatever it was. Yeah, they were
it's like load those sock hop thing.
Oh, yeah, same type of thing. I mean, where was that? What city?
Foreman, Arkansas. The last little town on the corner bottom of the state, right on the Red River.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there like a, do you see like a lot of comic or a lot of country artists that are like, that are not like that, that try to act like that?
I don't know. I've noticed that there are more current country artists and musicians that are from Nashville, and that was not a thing years ago. Most people were from out of town. But I do find that most people that are in this business come from smaller populations, and and they might not be that small, but they're still a little bit more rural, and they grew up in kind of a different type of environment.
We always make a joke about how whenever a big country, like, you know, I'm talking about like the commercial country artists, whenever they are out, like, in nature, they have to document it. Like, we're out here on the tractor. I'm like, dude, John Party, you're not on a tractor, dog. Like, no, you might be, but like, dude, we're out here. Like, whenever Dierks Bentley goes out, he's like, hey, make sure that we get the camera crews out here, because we have to make sure everybody knows that we are on a 4x4.
I remember my buses, we had a place we parked the buses up at the front part of the property. And I don't remember, we had some kid, it might have been a light guy or something. And we were riding back in during the day, and we came by, there was some cows in the pasture out there. And there was a bull standing out there, this big old massive Brahma bull. And he said, that's the biggest cow I've ever seen. I said, that's because it's a bull. There's it's fascinating to me to realize that there are people in the world that have never actually touched a cow.
No, dude, I never touched a cow before.
Really? You never touched a cow? You never went cow tipping when you were a kid?
I thought that was a myth.
That's no, that's a real shit, man.
Yeah, it is.
It is. And they hit and they go, when they hit the ground in the middle of the night.
Well, I saw one in standing about waist deep in the water.
Oh, yeah.
And I was fixing it. I go, oh, I got to. I think I got to tell him about that.
Do you want to go out there and meet and introduce you?
I'm saying I didn't think that was, they're not doing good, or they're stuck. They're fine.
Oh, no, they're fine. They're just in the water cooling off.
Oh, they are?
Just hanging out. It's kind of like the spa.
That's allowed.
Yeah, absolutely allowed.
How do you know if one's in trouble?
It
wouldn't be.
Well, usually when they start having trouble, usually it's during birthing, and usually there's somebody watching them when they're getting ready to calve, because you got to watch, because they're down a little bit. We have coyotes out here, too, so you got
to
watch that.
I need to have can I have like a summer internship out here?
Absolutely.
For a month.
How long has it been since you mowed a yard?
Yeah, it's been since high.
Can you run a weed eater?
Since I was high school.
Can you sharpen a blade?
Yeah, but I don't have the
can you climb a ladder?
No, dude.
Are you allergic to wasp?
Yeah, probably. I'd have to have a whole new outfit, wardrobe. I don't know.
You got to look the part.
Yeah,
man.
I got nothing. Yeah.
There was a show, and I've been wanting to ask somebody about this. There was a show called I'm Dying Up Here.
Yeah.
Did you watch any of that?
Oh, the comedy show?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I freaking love that show, man. I really, the girl, what was her name?
It didn't last. The show didn't last
two
long,
seasons.
But it was such. Yeah, yeah.
It was two seasons, but I really thought it was good. I wonder how true to form that was with the early days, because they had some guy, a guy that was playing Richard Pryor and doing flashbacks on all that stuff, and it seemed pretty spot on period wise with a lot of stuff that was going on.
Comedy Store in L.A.
Yeah,
yeah. Andrew Santino was in that show. A good buddy of mine.
Yeah,
yeah. It's people are fascinated by the stand by the comedy. By the art form, I think I looked at your history. All you had is Chelsea Lynn on here, which I'm not going to judge you.
But yeah,
there's no other comics.
And you're popping my cherry.
Oh, we need a bushwhacker first, or what? Not a bushwhacker. What is it? Bush hog, dude. I need
bushwhacker. I think is a drink.
Yeah, bushwhackers are different. Yeah.
I'd jab on the beach.
It's well, comedy. I was telling somebody last night. I go, dude. Every time I publish on a video or go up on stage. I mean, we go up on stage Monday night at Zany's. Everybody asks you, how do you come up with new material?
Yeah.
Zany's here in town, the comedy club, on Monday night is New Material Monday. So all the big guys, Theo Vaughn and Nate Bargatze and Steve Byrne and all the guys, we all tour on the weekends at the big theaters. But how do you start one? How do you start a new joke?
Yeah.
And you go, what, you just got to kind of take a pen and paper and kind of go out there. Because if I told you a joke, you have, and all y'all in here, you have a certain point of view and your certain race, socioeconomic, geography that makes jokes funny to you. And not, so you need kind of a chunk of people, kind of 100 people. Because you could be like, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. And you could be like, I don't like that. So you need, if I could just run jokes by you, it would be easier. But unfortunately, you need a whole squad.
When you get in that situation, say you're doing a 15-minute slot, and you're reading the room, and do you kind of test the crowd? And if you know that it's kind of a diverse crowd, or it's a one side leaning or the other market, and you kind of test the water with a little bit of something before you go in with a heavy something a little bit down in the set?
Well, the so on the weekends, I have two openers, and they kind of go out. It's so funny because my opener has a bit about, he goes, he's exaggerating a number, and he goes, that's like 50 billion trillion zillion, and then he goes, that's like a Joe Biden number, and we just sit and see how it does, and if it just kind of gets a good chuckle, then we move. That's the end.
That's kind of a benign test.
Yeah, and that's the end of his joke. Like that's it doesn't. But if it gets a huge, like sometimes it gets a big laugh followed by an applause break.
Yeah,
and if that happens, then you know, then the joke, the bit is probably. I mean, he goes, we got to take the numbers out the speeches. Can we take the numbers? He's like, this is the only president I've ever seen to get assassinated by gravity. I mean, and he goes, that's air, bro. That's air. Don't try to trick me. It was a sandbag. It's not a sandbag, bro. That's air. And he does a whole, but we all do that on all the topics. So if you do throw an idea out and it kind of doesn't take, I guess, that's just the end of the bit. And no one would know the difference. And then you come tomorrow night and that same bit is 10 minutes long based on, and then us comics listen, he'll come back off stage and tell us what was working, what wasn't working. Sometimes the crowd is older versus younger, left leaning, right leaning, rich, poor, all kind of demographics. And he'll tell us what's working and not working. And we kind of take that from there.
How long did it take you to figure that out when you first started?
Well, I couldn't figure it out because I didn't have any joke. If they said you got 10 minutes, I only had 10 minutes of jokes. So I couldn't.
Couldn't read the room. You didn't have the
like, if you're like, I only have three songs, they're like, play three songs. You're like, well, too bad. If you don't like these, here we are.
How much has it changed with the polarization of the country post COVID with where you are as on stand up? I mean, because it seems pretty dangerous up there at times.
Well, it is. Every comic that I know, and Chelsea Lynn will tell you the same story, every comic that I know is sold out everywhere for the rest of the year. Because, I mean, we got comics, Theo, buddy of mine, adding like a ninth show in Toronto. Like nine. That's like a...
Wow.
So you do Saturday, and you add a Saturday matinee. Then you go Sunday matinee. That's, he's staying there for a week. And these are huge venues. And he's doing two shows a night. So, like, when the world is, like, a little bit upside down, people are like, oh, political correctness, that, like, it makes it so tough to be a comedian. I go, no, it actually makes it very easy because you can't say anything. All comedy is just crossing the line. Yeah. And they moved the line from, like, way over here. They moved it all the way back to where you can't even say, as a dude that kind of looks like a chick. Like, you can't even say that. So the line to go across it is literally like, boop. Like, you just have to, and everybody's like, ah. So it's so easy. It makes it so easy to, and when you, everybody here, I say our show is just like the group text with your buddies out loud. That's what the show is. Like, because all y'all think this, but no one, everybody wants to keep their job, right? Everybody wants to keep their family. Everybody wants to keep their house. So they go, okay, and everybody goes, but you ever seen like an Instagram reel with like 1,000 comments but like 1,000,000 shares, and you go, okay, so no one wants to like press like on this, but like
they're sharing it with all the people.
Everybody is sharing. They're not posting it to their stories, they're texting it.
Oh yeah,
like out, because you go,
and lots of memes.
Yeah.
Oh, lots
meme
of memes.
Culture is huge.
It's huge,
because when you say you can't say something, then you think, like, everything that happened during COVID is obviously terrible for the country and the world, but incredible for comedy. Because now they said, wait, what? And you can't say it. So now the comics is the only ones, like, that are saying it. So every comic show is packed, which is tough. Obviously, we don't want you, it's tough for the country when the politicians are a little bit upside down and all that stuff. But, I mean, in terms of comedy,
they give you a lot of material.
Oh gosh!
Oh my gosh!
Oh, so and you're just gonna go, what? We're literally just reading the news up there.
Yeah,
it's when so
you
absurd.
When you were a kid and you were hanging out with your buddies, were y'all just busting on each other all the time? Was that your culture?
Well, yeah, because my dad was a preacher.
Yeah.
So we, my dad was a preacher, me and my best
friend. You were a PK. I knew some PKs. Oh, yeah, y'all are the craziest people on the planet, man.
Well, we would sit in the back, and the worship leader's son, we would kind of sit in the back and just kind of like, just we, I guess we kind of saw the like behind the scenes of the church.
Oh, yeah.
And then the what they were, so we knew that like the church was maybe like struggling financially or maybe needed a new building or the pastors, and but we knew the truth, and then we knew what they were saying on the stage, and it was different things, and that's what makes the best comedy.
Yeah,
because you're like, oh, like the pastor's daughter is in charge of the children's ministry. I'm like, dude, she was drunk last. Like we that's what makes the best comedy, because we were like, wait, what? And we were just dying in the back.
What denomination? What denomination did you grow up in?
It was called the Vineyard, which is like closest to probably Pentecostal.
Yeah,
yeah.
I remember I grew up Methodist, and my grandmother was Pentecostal. Oh yeah, I was UMY youth group, all that. Yeah. Had a college to seminary. Had a scholarship to seminary, and country music kind of stole me away. Devil stole me, man. But I remember I would spend the summers with my grandmother, and I'd go to the Pentecostal church.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember there was the one guy that always got up and started speaking in tongues. And I mean, even as a young kid, I'm like, this is some bullshit. I mean, it was always the same guy, and it was always the same person interpreting, and it always sounded like the same gibberish. I'm like, something's wrong here, man.
And it's not even like you didn't really necessarily. That's the root of humor, because you didn't really have like the professional maybe experience to like verbalize that, but you knew.
Yeah, as a little kid, it's like,
Yeah, you didn't really make a humor out of it, but you knew it was like. It sounded like the same guy. Maybe the guy wants a little bit of attention. Maybe like it feels good to get up there on the stage. Maybe it feels good to be a little bit whole. Like all the human thoughts.
Absolutely.
And you go, I don't know about that. And that's what like all those like crime documentaries and all the true crime and the murder mystery stuff. We all love to watch those because we see like we're all human. We all live by the same kind of general code. Like if you were like. I'm going to go down to New Orleans on Tuesday to like see the Saints play. We're like, all right, that we can get. And then we go, I'm going down there again. And then you're like, every week you're going down to New Orleans. We go, something. No.
Something's not right.
No. And your wife for sure would be like, no. But why would she say that? Because that's not, everybody is human. So when you see someone doing something either for attention or maybe addiction or maybe getting it, you know, because you are also one of the kind. So you go, yeah, what's going on there?
And I like to watch those crime things. Sometimes they're great to nap to. It's just the music. It just kind of gets you there. But I mean, and you sit there and wonder, it's like, well, I think back to the past, it's like, that relationship could have pushed me there. This could have pushed me there. And it's always, you know, I think back to Michael Douglas in Falling Down. You remember that movie?
I know Michael
where
Douglas.
He just went off the freaking rails and just went on this killing rampage and wound up committing suicide at the end. It's like, you're one step away from a mental breakdown that takes you completely over the freaking edge, man.
And you're lucky to be, here.
And with all this crazy stuff going on in the world, I think that's where everybody's just lost their freaking mind so much.
Or would you get kind of like pressed, and like especially with the internet, people that aren't in your circle can say things about you, right? So you read things about yourself, or even let's not even say that. Let's say today you tried to get employment, and it's like working out for us. The system, what do you call it, democracy or whatever you call it, has kind of worked for us.
Yeah,
but to some people it hasn't. Right? They can't seem to find a job. They can't seem to find love. They can't seem to find, and just the world is just constantly. Push them out. Like, what? When does it, like, all right, I'm taking this in my own hands. Or you get cut off in traffic and you go, enough is enough. Right?
Yeah. It's always just right there. It's always right there.
Everybody's kind of right on the edge, dude. Yeah, if you stay on it, I feel like if I stay on the road for too long, that kind of.
That's not real healthy, man.
No, dude. I start getting mad at all the crew and all the. You get antsy about stuff, and it's not good.
They really should serve breakfast past 10:30, though. Don't you think? That was in Falling Down.
That's good to know. That's good. Scott.
I thought it was 10.
Was it 10?
I thought it was 10. Okay. Fast food, it's 10.
I have to watch it again. That's a great
idea. That's why I like going to Whataburger. They serve all of it all day long.
Yeah,
it just don't matter.
All day, no matter whenever all you day want. Breakfast. Yeah. Well, everybody needs to go, like, when you are pressed, right? When you're pressed, you're stressed to the max. Your job's not working. What do you? Some people go, you know, I just need to order a pizza and watch a TV show. That's enough for some people. Some people need to go drink. Some people need to go. I did a lot of guys down on Broadway that, like, if they're either looking for women, and if they can't find women, they want to fight.
Yeah,
they want to fight. And that about midnight to one, that's when it starts. I mean, it's the zombie apocalypse on Broadway.
Well, I always heard from the older folks, man, there's nothing good happens after midnight.
No. Because you go, you're looking for...
You're looking for something.
Something, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, the current situation as it is untenable. So you need something. And some guys like to go jump out of a helicopter or race in their car. I like to do stand-up. That always gets me.
Yeah, but I've found that the guys that are thrill seekers that need that, they find an outlet for that. And you have to. You know, you think about those guys that come back that have been in war situations where they've gone over there and they excel in that environment, then come back, try to assimilate back into life.
And you got to go cleaning out the pool, and you're like, I can't. Yeah. Well, I think about those guys. We've made jokes about it, but I think about those guys in that submersible. It's sad, of course, but you're like, man, I envy that somebody believed and got up every morning with such a purpose. I mean, misguided or maybe more risk than needed, but that guy was into it.
And paid a lot of money.
Yeah, and he was like excited about. I mean, you can't say.
Can you imagine when that first crack, when that
it gets me chills, man.
When you know it's starting to collapse in on itself, it's like, this is not good.
I can't imagine. I cannot imagine.
It makes my hands sweat.
That's what everybody's so glued to that story.
Oh yeah,
because you go, dude, I can't. And everybody's looking at each other in the eye down there, going, oh, but. I mean, he believed in it. He was on it himself. He didn't like he sold it to someone else to go down there.
I wish everybody get back to the point where their skin was a little bit thicker, where they didn't take everything so personal. And that's why one of the original questions, you remember when we were kids, man, you had to have thick skin as a kid growing up when we grew up, because people were picking on you all the time.
All the time.
And you had to be witty, and you had to learn comebacks, and you had to stand your ground, because that's kind of the way you establish respect from your peers.
And you kind of got, I mean, dude. My buddies, you're going to laugh at this, but whenever you're like, did something like whatever you call it, like wimpy, or like couldn't hit a baseball, or they called me vagina. Hilarious. Listen, now you guys are laughing, just reinforcing the trauma.
I was Dick Tracy and dickless and all kinds of stuff, man. I heard it all.
Yeah, but you didn't, I mean, I think, I don't know who I was telling this to recently. I remember finding a girl that I wanted to go to prom with, like after school, like looking for her, finding her, and be like, hey, Jennifer, do you want to go to prom with me? And she was like, no. Like, and you just had to like kind of figure that out.
Yeah.
Like you just kind of had like, and that it's like an uncomfortable situation to put a kid in, but that's how you learn. Like, yeah, that's how life works.
Yeah, everything does not come easy to everybody. I mean, sometimes you get kicked in the nuts. You got to get knocked down. You got to get up.
And you start.
Did you go through any hazing when you got into high school?
Oh, yeah.
What was the ritual? I'll tell you what ours was.
Go ahead.
Red bellies.
Oh, really?
The upperclassmen would chase you around because we were ninth grade, went to high school where I was from.
Yeah.
It was sixth through eighth in junior high, and it was on the other side of town. So in ninth grade, you went to high school.
Oh, yeah.
So the upperclassmen would chase you around and hold you down at lunch, and they would beat on your belly. Red bellies, man. They beat the crap out of you. But it was a rite of passage.
And everybody kind of knew.
It's just part of it.
I'm sure the teachers knew about that.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't that big a thing. It was just part of the culture.
And you look back now, you're like, oh, it was. In high school, it was traumatizing. You're like,
I look forward to being an upperclassman so I could do it to the young kids.
It's the same in a fraternity. Yeah. They would go, all that kind of stuff on the, like, I remember the hazing.
Oh, absolutely.
In the fraternities and stuff like that.
Yep.
I remember in the, when I first joined the fraternity, we were like, you know, they take you out on a road trip. So they would take you out in the middle of nowhere, blindfolded.
Oh, yeah.
And they would ask you all the quiz you about the fraternity or the history of it, right? And we were like, I learned all the information, so they can't haze you if you know all the information. So they're like, they ask you all the history of the fraternity, and I knew everything. And then he goes, Christ. And I was like, sir, yes, sir. I'd never forget this. He goes, if you and Lancaster, Lancaster was another of the brothers, older classmen that was on the other side of the field hazing somebody. He goes, if you and Lancaster's sister were in the woods together alone and she got bit on the nipple by a poisonous snake, would you suck out the venom or let her die? I go, like it's a trap of a, and they're like, I guess, sir, to save her life, I would. He's like, what? Yeah, and then he's like, Lancaster, get over here. And I'm like, no. Nah. He's like, do you saying that you would say? You're like, no, I didn't say it. He's like, are you calling him a liar? Like, get on your knees now. It's like so silly, but it's like,
but it's a rite of passage.
And you're a kid.
Yeah.
And there is like a, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I could defend fraternities existing today. I mean, some of the stuff is hard.
I think they got a little bit overboard with it. I mean, there's you know, it was all good fun back then with us.
Yeah. And everybody liked each other. There was no, like, the guys that were kind of bullying people, we knew that those guys were going to.
They were playing a role.
Yeah, they did. And they loved it. Yeah, there was no ill will toward anybody. But
What was your fraternity?
Pi Kappa Phi.
Sigma Pi, baby.
Really? Sigma Pi?
Yeah, Sigma Pi.
Oh, yeah, dude. I can't even remember anything about those days.
Yeah, it was kind of a blur.
Yeah. Well, the young guy, we thought it was like, I was watching a podcast or something yesterday where it was either Matt Damon or Ben Stiller or somebody. He goes, I wish I could just tell everybody that, like, and this too shall pass. Like, when that girl said no to me for prom, I was like, I'm going to have to move schools. Like, it was, you know, my world was so small back then, and now, like, countless albums, and you do things that take off, you do things that flop, and you go, I'm planning on being a comedian for a long, long time.
Do you think that that kind of pressure is one of the things causing so much pressure on teenagers with social media and stuff, because they're so busy trying to appeal to a larger group of people? Yeah. Anything that goes wrong just devastates them.
There isn't a possibility for something we did in high school to leave, not even the high school. Like,
oh, yeah, it didn't leave the playground.
No, it didn't even leave the grade.
Yeah.
Kind of if you did something silly, your buddies would know about it. Word would maybe get around. Like, if you got embarrassed in football, like, the other cities didn't know, because there was no video. It was less risk on the line, maybe. But
now it's everywhere.
Now it's everywhere.
Now it goes viral.
And they want the good stuff to go everywhere. But that, I mean, yeah, we signed up to kind of play this game of.
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing. I look back on the 90s and I think about a lot of the stuff we did, you know, in the early 90s, and we'd probably be in prison, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Before cameras and social media and all the things, because everything is watching you nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be in prison, or at least, like, socially, you can't say that, or you would be outcast in some way.
So do comedians play pranks on each other?
No.
Dangerous?
No, we don't. We like to be in on the joke.
Yeah.
Like, we don't like to be, like, surprised or like, we don't. To the fault of our ego, we think we're, like, better than that.
Anything ever push you to losing your cool on stage?
I don't really have any hate, like, inside me. Like, if somebody goes, if you would have told one of my friends, like, John Crisp got in a fight, you go, no, he didn't. Like, that's it. No, he didn't. He doesn't do that. Like, they always say on stage, if someone comes at you with a knife, you got to come back with a knife. Like, you can't drop an atomic bomb on them, because everybody's like, whoa. So, like, I'm doing a show and someone goes, John Chris sucks, like, that, no one's ever done that. But if they did, if they were doing a joke and everybody laughed at that, then the crowd needs to be on your side. So if there's, like, a bachelorette party, they're talking the whole time, being like, oh my God, I love it. And someone goes, hey, I don't care who you are, your husband's got to be signing up for a lifetime of misery, because you guys sound terrible. If all the crowd was against them for being annoying the whole time, I'm going to tell that joke and the air is going to explode out of the room, because everybody goes, thank you.
Yeah.
So if there's somebody that's just like, we love you, and I'm like, I come down hard on her, everybody's like, whoa, we're with her.
Yeah.
Or, like, you just got to know, the crowd just got to be with you, or else you come. I mean, same thing we're just talking about. If the video comes out and you are, like, crushing somebody, it's like, dude.
It's like, you know, somebody just, it was a few months back when somebody rushed the stage on Chappelle. And
oh, yeah.
That's pretty scary shit, man.
No, it's scary.
Oh, I mean, because that guy was pretty serious.
Oh, yeah. He's like mentally a little bit ill.
You got to worry about that stuff nowadays.
We do. I don't like to live in fear.
I agree.
But yeah, we do. Like, I mean, there's stuff all the time where people say things, because comedy, if it's done correctly, the only thing that ever offends people is truth. So when you say something that's true and everybody's like everybody making fun of you, like if you're Vladimir Putin, you like, I'm putting these rules down and I'm angry at these rules and we're fighting. You still have your dignity and honor and you're going head to head. Making fun of someone is so demoralizing. Like making fun of, like exposing who they are. It's like, dude, there's nothing
freaking
worse.
Love it. And yeah. It's hard not to laugh when somebody does something stupid and hurts yourself too. That's the greatest, man.
Yeah. For somebody. Yeah. Yeah.
Just, yeah.
And, but every joke we ever make, we try to be like, if that person, let's say I'm making a joke about, let's say Morgan Wallen or Eric Church or whoever. Well, I love all those guys, by the way. If we're on, let's say Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
I'm on the road making this Kim Kardashian joke and it's killing. Everybody's laughing at it. And then my agent comes and he goes, hey, we're in Calabasas or whatever. Kim Kardashian's coming to the show tonight. And if I was to remove that joke, that's not a joke I should be telling anyway. Like any joke that I would ever make about anybody, if they were there, they'd be like, that's funny. I try. Now, I can't bat 1,000.
Yeah.
But for the most part, whatever you're making fun of, like, I'd say it to their face.
So I just got this, and this is my country music.
Causing a lot of stir on the internet.
I love it.
You see the Justin Nunley video?
I have not, but I need to check it out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Who would be your comedian?
I was thinking about that on the way over here. Now, I'm 39. So when I was – I guess genre wise, I would say, I don't even know if you're going to laugh at this, but Garth Brooks,
comedian.
Eric Church. Oh, you're talking about comedians.
Comedians.
Yeah. Oh, comedians.
Yeah, comedians.
Okay,
man.
Cat Williams, number one.
Cool.
Cat Williams is the reason I started comedy. Cedric the Entertainer, I would put on there. He's everybody's favorite movie or everybody's favorite song is when, for a boy around 12, 13, 14, 15. Because that's when you were first, like I saw The Fugitive is my favorite movie.
Yeah.
It was like, when I saw it, I was like right at that age where I was like you're not going to have a new favorite band now.
Yeah.
You're just not. I like right in the time that you're very like, you're old enough to like understand things, but not, you're too, still a little bit scared of the world. Like when I was, I saw The Kings of Comedy. When I saw it, I was like, this. My life was changed by it. Same with Cat Williams, The Pimp Chronicles. I saw it, and I was like, this is. And then I would say probably Brian Regan when I was coming up. And then I would probably say Chappelle, just because of the early, when I was in college, the Chappelle Show was so, I mean, we would watch those DVDs. Some of those skits were
they're amazing.
So absolutely unbelievable. And a hold up. Over time, by the way, incredibly.
One of my favorites, and he's passed away, rest his soul, is Mitch Hedberg.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. And I've gone back and watched some of the early stuff before he got his cadence down.
Oh, yeah.
Because he finally found his groove where he had a certain delivery that gave him his style. And it took him a little bit to get there. And it was fascinating as I've gotten into people like that where you kind of watch the development of how they hone that craft along the way.
Well, they say Richard Pryor. And Dave Chappelle, they say no comic, it's impossible to be prolific before 40 because it just takes so much time to have, like you said, your cadence. Once he kind of gets like, oh, this is who he is. But his younger stuff, you could be like, oh, he was not really sure of himself on the stage and rock. And then you kind of settle into the, and then you don't really have anything to say before 40 or in terms of like,
It seems like when you get to that point, it's like what we talked about earlier, being able to read the room a little bit better, yeah. having a catalog and a body of work, having a real responsive wit and being well-read, too, in a lot of ways. Yeah. And I think that's been educated. Good for Chappelle.
Yeah.
Chappelle is very diverse in a lot of subjects,
yeah.
and he can trap you down, but he will start off early, and you don't even know how he wraps it all up, but he yeah. brings it all home at the end. It's pretty yeah. fascinating how good the guy is.
Is it Chappelle and Richard Pryor were the only two that they said have been transcendent before 40.
Yeah.
Because you just, I mean, some of those, the black white supremacists, the racial draft, I mean, some of those, the mad real world, the box copy, what some of those were just, when I was in I would say the Alec G show at that, like in 2003, 2004, where like, this is, I was just kind of out of the house. My dad was obviously a preacher. That stuff was never
allowed. Had no Red Fox records in the house.
No, dude, no, we weren't even allowed to watch Bill Cosby. I mean, nothing.
Yeah.
Humor was not well. I mean, I guess me and my buddies would joke about stuff, but it wasn't anything people were laughing. It seemed like just kind of like your Pentecostal. Like it seemed like that was
something was off.
Nah, we're not. We don't like this. What are y'all chatting about? What are y'all laughing about? I don't like this. Yeah.
I even loved Eddie Murphy. Man, I remember when Raw came out. I mean, it just, but going to the movie with your girlfriend, it kind of pushed some boundaries a little bit. But I didn't.
You saw it in a theater?
I saw it in a theater.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, dude, the comedy hasn't been in a theater in a while.
Yeah.
Stand up.
Raw was in the freaking theater, man.
I guess that was the only place for it.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't have all the other platforms for it to reach an audience out there. And it was very uncomfortable. But even then.
Eddie Murphy Raw came out in a movie theater.
Yes.
And then you would have to, after a couple months, you'd rent it.
I don't think I ever rented it. I mean,
how you would see it.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Go to Blockbuster and rent it.
Yeah. Really?
A DVD or a VHS.
I mean, now you have like people would, whatever happened like on Sunday, there's like bits about it on Monday.
Oh, it's instantaneous.
It's crazy. It's like, this is so, all right, even our podcast, we do once a week and we record on Tuesday. If something happened on Wednesday, by the next, it's done. Like if you're talking about a current event or like a news, it's already done.
Well, and I was talking about this with another guest a while back. You know, if you think back to, you know, before social media, and think of the country music guys that I looked up to, yep. if they did something stupid on the road or they got busted doing whatever, you know, by the time it got a chance to work its way through the population,
yeah.
it became kind of a mystique thing.
Like, did you hear?
Yeah. And it little bits and pieces get added to it. It gets to grow to this thing, and it spreads all over the country.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
nowadays,
yeah.
it doesn't have like time to fester and grow. Anything that happens, it doesn't have time to become a cultish thing anymore.
Yeah, it just
because it's just there.
Like, did you hear about? And then you on the road to the next city, and like, yeah, I heard about. And then it
floats around the buses. And,
yeah.
But nowadays, you hear about it, you type it in the internet, and boom, yep, there it is.
Yeah, there it is. I heard about so-and-so. Yeah, if somebody has a, like, says something on stage or has, like, a, you know, like the Miranda Lambert thing.
Oh, yeah.
It was everywhere.
Now you just get to see it.
Yeah, it was everywhere the next day.
20 years ago, nothing would have happened with that. It'd have been nothing.
Oh, dude, of course not.
They'd have been talking about it in the local market, and that would be
Maybe the promoter would have said something. I doubt
it. Would have got back to the booking agent, and management would have had to talk to her, but it would have done nothing else.
That would have been the end of it. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, that,
I miss those days because I remember hearing all these stories about Rod Stewart getting his stomach pumped out and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Richard Gere would.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You hear all that stuff, man.
Well, you know, Zanies, I mean, this is the only place I've heard it done, but Zanies is the only place in the country that I know of that when you go in there, they give everyone those pouches and they lock up your phone.
I like that.
They lock up everybody's phone.
Yeah.
And you still have it. So if it's on vibrate, something happens or your kid,
you can go outside.
Babysitter. Yeah, you can go outside. But everything's locked up.
Do they give you a key? I mean,
they lock it, and then when you leave, there's this magnetic thing that pops it open.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So nobody wants to hand their phone.
I've heard that Garth is doing that in his new shows, residency. Have y'all heard that? Yeah,
it's easy. I tell you, if you're in a residency, it's easier.
Yeah.
If you're on the road, like the mechanics of bringing that out. I mean, Bill Burr did it at Fenway Park, and the show didn't start until 2 hours later. Because for everybody. Just to go swipe a ticket and walk through and go to the metal detector takes time.
Oh, yeah. You're
talking about 50,000 people. To everybody do that is like, dude, it took forever. And the lines were backed up to the all the way into all through Boston.
I would love to meet Bill Burr. A freaking cat, yeah. Man. He don't give a shit.
Well, it's funny you say that because he speaks with such like he's like I mean that abortion bit he had on his newest special. Did you see that?
I hadn't seen that one yet.
It was like everybody's arguing. You know, is it a baby? Is it not a baby? And on both sides, and he goes, "Yeah, it's like if you come over to my house, I put a cake in the oven, and you can. I'm doing the bit a tremendous disservice. You take the cake out, smash it on the ground. He's like, dude, it wasn't a cake. You're like, yeah, but it's gonna be. And it's like he goes, yeah, but it was gonna be. And it's just such. Chappelle does that too. It's just so true.
Yeah,
that you just go. Huh. And he just kind of like, that's the what's great about comedy. Just kind of leave it and you just go, here, do what you want with this.
He's another one of those guys that got his cadence along the way that yeah. really developed it. And you can yeah. really watch his progression as he went through
and
the
he
years.
Can't, like, if you're, I mean, you're probably the same. All artists are the same. If you're like trying to make songs that people like, if you're trying to write radio hits
yeah,
and they don't work, it's so embarrassing because you're like, I thought this is what y'all wanted and y'all didn't want it. But like Bill Burr, he's like, y'all need to hear this. This is the truth. And he if you talk about a comedian like bombing, like a comedian, he can't because he believes in it so strongly. He's like, he's not trying to do like, bunny, 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 bunny. Like, he's like, I don't care what y'all think.
But he don't care if it lands well or if it crashes off the end of the runway.
No, he's still
gonna
he's still gonna
be able to manipulate it into being what he wants it to be by the end of the number.
Yeah. And of course, yeah, and you, a comedian with any kind of like any kind of skill or any kind of experience certainly would be like I would say something like, "All right, well, you know, if you can't try a new joke at the matinee show in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, I don't know where you're going to try one." Like, it's something to kind of...
Yeah.
Because if you play a bad song or hit a bad note or your bassist does something, they may or may not know.
Yeah.
When I tell a joke that doesn't land, everybody knows. Everybody in there is like, oh, that didn't go good. So, but if you've been doing it long enough, they're like, have you ever...
You just roll past it.
Yeah, you kind of go, all right, like, okay, no on that one. That worked better in Portland last night. Or there's a couple, like, what we call, like, rescue lines.
Yeah.
That, like, it'll bail you out of it if
what's the hardest freaking room you ever played?
When people are not coming for comedy, like, when you shower, go out to dinner, and buy $60 tickets to my show, show up early, get in the parking deck, sit down, you're ready for, and you know, also know me. So, yeah. You know, but when you're surprise attacking anyone with comedy, it never goes good.
I've never seen it work well in big festivals where there's music going on and they try to put a comedian between sets.
No.
That is the freaking kiss of death.
Have you seen it?
Oh, I've seen it with Williams and Ree. Oh, my God. Nobody wants to hear that shit.
Wait, so in between musical acts?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yes, I've seen it.
Trying to do bits?
It's got
to
be hard as hell.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, first of all, comedy, it needs to be dark.
It's got to be set right.
You need three things. Darkness, indoors, and seated. So if you're just standing, it's not good for comedy. If it's outside, the laughs will just go.
Too many distractions.
Yeah, we need it. And comedy would even say it's an arena show is bad. Because just do like the Ryman or the Opry House is like just do that four times or five times before you would do Bridgestone.
Do you find big rooms easier or harder than small rooms?
Way harder.
I remember seeing Jeff Foxworthy and all that. What was Blue Collar.
Yeah.
And they came to Bridgestone. I think what made that work so well is they were able to play off each other. That would be a real tough situation being there by yourself. I guess some guys do it.
But you're watching off on the screens.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, so you're watching on the screen.
You're really not able to connect. You're maybe pockets of people, but you're not able to connect with the entire crowd.
That's what they say. They say if you do an arena, is what they say. Like that's kind of not the end of your like touring in that city, but like that's probably the last time they're coming in that city.
So you'll get one tour out of it.
Yeah, but then they go, hey, he's back, and you go, ah. It was a lot to go down there and park. And we felt so disconnected. The guy next to me was going out and getting popcorn, and there was cotton candy, and the guy was, it's so like, but when you're at the Ryman watching a comedy show, if you, if a great comedy is nothing better. And you would go, hey, he's back. 18 months later, he's back. I go, I'm going. I'm going.
Yeah, the Ryman's great. I went to the thing, Kid Rock.
Oh, I was there. You went there?
I was there. It was great.
Which one? This year?
This year, yeah. The guy at the end bombed. What was his name? There was one guy at the end, and he just fell apart right at the end. I think it was.
Who was it?
I can't remember his name. It's like second to the last.
That was the year before.
No, I was there this year. Oh,
okay. That was the one where Theo came out.
Yeah, that was the year before, yeah. And the guy from the Chappelle Show came on last, and he bombed. Remember, the guy yelled at him, and because everyone else was killing, and it kind of
Shane Gillis
crushed. Yeah, Theo crushed.
I love Theo, man. He's badass.
Chance, everybody crushed. And then he came on. Who was it? But somebody yelled out something, but it was like racial, but it wasn't like racist. It was just something about, and then he kind of like.
And it just turned the crowd off on him.
He turned on them. But they weren't, they were just like drunk.
Yeah.
They were just drunk and kind of being chatty. And he kind of turned on them, and yeah, I remember that.
He's probably out all night on Lower Broad, man. He got tore up. And he just
Kid Rock. Yeah,
yeah, it happens.
Yeah, but they, but if you go, they don't know. I'm trying to think of who it was. They don't know. They don't know who's coming out, so they don't know. Like if you know Theo or if you know Shane Gillis, you know their humor.
Yeah.
So you're kind of mentally prepped for what they're, oh, I like this guy. But if there's 7, 8, 9 comics, your brain has to reset. Donnell Rawlings. Yeah, dude. No disrespect. I mean, I love Donnell. Yeah, but you can't bat 1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it turned into something, and everybody, I tell the guys that come on the road with me, I go, hey, if you give them right up top, if you give them a big belly laugh, it's a good feeling. They like to feel that you want another one. So they are now rooting for you to give them another one. Now, if you go 90 seconds and don't give them one, you're now turning into you're what's in between them and the guy that came to see. So they'll turn on you very quickly as an opener if you don't just come out and hit them.
Wow.
That's
some pressure right there.
Well, as a comic, we watching another professional comic like bomb is but it's happened to all of us, dude. It's happened to all of us because we like, if you're any musician or an actor or LeBron James or Tom Brady or whoever, the crowd can be a part of what you're doing, or the crowd can help you and motivate you. For us, no comic is confident because we can't even do it without them.
Yeah.
Like you can sing, and if the crowd's not into it, you'd book a corporate or some, then you're like,
tune it out.
Yeah, yeah. And you could just play with your band and play the songs and just do the hits and get out of there.
Yeah.
We can't. And there's always jokes about how like they book you for an hour. So like, I mean, dude, I've been in colleges. Like we used to do a bunch of colleges and like cruise ships when you're coming up. Like you just take gigs anywhere, a lot of churches and stuff like that. And it's like, you're 9 minutes in and it's going horribly. And you can't be like, hey, this isn't going good. How about I wrap this up? You guys go to the bar. We'll call it. You are contracted for 60 minutes. I'm nervous thinking about it.
Have you ever gotten into one of those situations and just went brain dead and can't think of shit?
Well, you have bits. Let's say you do a chunk. I got a chunk on like my family group text. It's like, I mean, probably in the special, I want to say 11, 12, 13, 14 minutes. It becomes like a 90 second bit because you're not exploring artistically. You're just like saying the big lines.
Yeah.
Like the big hitter punchlines, and they're not hitting. And you'll do an hour of material in 9 minutes and you go, I don't know what else to do, dude. Yeah.
Delivery gets real quick and you completely get off balance.
Yeah, you talk to the guy.
Start
what's going
sweating.
On? Yeah. You go, that's like, what's that hat say? Or you go into something. I mean, just to figure. We used to do like colleges. Like colleges would book comics that they think this is going to be a good idea. And it's like literally in the food court and you're on the little stage in the corner, because music, they book music and they book other acts, and they're like, oh, let's book a comedy. I go, no, we got to, like, it's like you got to stop for the ice machine when it, and like, it's just like,
it's like in the horrible. I'm dying up here. The guys were doing the stuff in the coffee shop and stuff, that's like the bottom of the freaking brutal barrel. That's just got to be.
I mean, we've probably done the same. We just did the Elkhart County Fair. You've probably done that.
Oh, yeah. We've done every swinging fair and the tractor pool and mud wrestling. Yeah. We played it all.
I came out on stage. I mean, this is probably 2 weeks ago. I came out on stage. I go, listen, I don't usually do fairs, but I told my agent, I go, listen, if I'm going to do a fair, I got several guidelines. I go, one, I need it to be, I need a